It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
All right, welcome to the State of Games. I'm Dice Amy.
And I'm Monkey238.
And this is episode 21, or as we like to call it, or as Monkey likes to call it, the one about gaming memories.
Memories.
So this is where we're going to take a look back at 2011 and all the games that we've played together. We've played a ton. We meant to actually look back and see exactly how many games we played throughout the year, but I would estimate it's well over 60. Wouldn't you think?
Oh, yeah, totes.
Oh, yeah. Maybe even close to 100. I mean, who knows?
Totes, Grant, totes.
Well, there's an inside joke for one listener. Okay. So, what we're going to do today is we're really completely off script on this. We've taken the time to compile a list of memories that we have from the past year. There will be some instances where we may reference other podcasts and... we'll get to those in just a minute. So before we go on, we'd like to thank our sponsor this week, as usual.
Eagle and Griffin.
Yes. And currently they have a project up on Kickstarter called Caveman Curling.
Caveman Curling.
That's right. It looks fantastic. And Brandon from Eagle and Griffin is sending us a production copy for us to test. And
I had no idea.
Well, there you go. You learn something every day.
Yeah.
So we're going to be playing it over the holidays. It should be in this week. And we'll be back we'll be back to tell you more about it on DiceHateMe.com, as well as the podcast as soon as we can. So go to Kickstarter.com, search for Caveman Curling. So our other sponsor for the podcast is...
my crack baby brother. John Moeller from Car Trunk Entertainment.
Yes. His Unpub 2, which is the Unpublished Games Symposium, or whatever they're choosing to name it this time around. But basically, we're going to talk more about that towards the end of the podcast, but just so you know, you should go to cartrunk.net and search for Unpub 2. He has huge banners on his site. You'll learn more about it. But we will be there, and it's going to be super cool.
January 14th.
14th.
From 10 to 10 in Dover, Delaware.
Dover, Delaware.
Exactly. Who goes to Dover?
Well, the Dover Demon goes to Dover.
Oh.
Have you ever heard about the Dover Demon?
Nope.
Remind me to tell you about the Dover Demon later.
Can't wait.
For our trip.
Can't wait.
If anyone wants to know about the Dover Demon, just write Dice Hate Me, and I'll tell everyone.
They could probably just Google it.
No, don't Google it. They have to hear it from me.
Because you know?
Because it's much more fun that
you
way.
You never know.
What? I know all the good ghost stories.
Yeah.
Anyway,
know.
We have
he
two...
never knows.
We have two games we would like to talk about in the Kickstarter Spotlight section before we get on to the main meat of the program.
Is that what we've titled it now?
That's right. It's now known the Kickstarter Spotlight.
Okay.
Okay. The first game is Frankendie.
Frankendie.
By Nutforge Games. And we've got a prototype. The prototype is gorgeous. If the final game is anything like the prototype, I mean, it'll be worth the money you pay on Kickstarter and in retail for it, hands down. A very frenetic game. Sort of a party game. I guess they call it a party game for the madly insane. But it's more reminiscent of a game sort of like Spoons or a card game like that where you're calling out sets or you're trying to, you know, grab spoons or slap. You're slapping the graveyard in this. And not something to play with someone who is very high strung. But you would have a good time with a group that is very good natured, good humored. Strongly suggest you check it out on Kickstarter. That's Frankendie. Hopefully, I'll have a little mini preview up on Dice Hate Me soon about that. It's going to be just very brief, but you'll get a little bit more of a flavor of the gameplay, and we'll be back for that. But anyway, Frankendie by Nutforge Games. Second on the list
is Rise by the folks at Crash Games. And they have, what, till the end of the year, they're
yes.
on Kickstarter, so you have a couple of more weeks to get in on their project. They are very, very close to their goal. And
yeah, they're just shy of 12,000 right now, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm sure that they will have continued success. They've done a really good job with their marketing and keeping their backers excited and engaged.
Exactly. Again, that is from Crash Games. That's headed by Patrick Nickel, who's a friend of the podcast. He'll be back on the podcast with some segments in the next year. And Michael Coe is the designer. And check that out on Kickstarter. Look for Rise. Are you ready to talk about games?
Sure.
Do you have your list?
Yeah, it's in my head.
It's in your head?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so what we've done to look back on the following year, we started the podcast in February of 2011, and so we've gotten up to episode 21, as you know now by listening to the beginning. But what we want to do is look back on this following year, ever since we started the podcast, and take a look at some of the gaming memories that we have over this past year. And some of them will overlap, obviously, because we do a lot of our gaming together. But I'm sure I'll have some on my list that did not include Monkey, because I went to a couple of conventions that she did not. So, this is all just a list. Again, completely unscripted. So, we're just going to wing it and talk about some good things. And I'll have a couple clips for the ones that go along with mine. So, this is in no particular order, right? You have not ordered these at all. We sat down and we said we'd come up with 10. 10 gaming moments. Because
no, we did not sit down and say that. You said to me, come up with 10. What ifs?
Well, just as a supplement for this, probably the day after the podcast airs, we're going to have our Games of the Year announcement, which will actually help us to name basically our top 3 games of the year. So you'll want to check that on DiceHateMe.com soon after you listen to the podcast. But for now, the instances we've come up with now are not ranked. They are simply our gaming memories of the year.
I guess I'll just start with one that happened most recently. We were at your company's Christmas party, and we got to play a game called Reverse Charades.
Yes.
Which, to be honest, when I first read it, I was like, okay, well, I like charades, but what the heck? It's reverse. What does that even mean? So, you know how typically in a game of charades, one person acts it out, and their teammates try and guess. Well, in reverse charades, there's one person guessing while the rest of their team act out the clue. And we played men against women.
Mm-hmm.
And the cool thing is when you have a team is that you can do things together, right? So you can use each other as
props. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't think I've laughed that much in a game in a long time.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah. It was a lot more fun than I thought it would be just from the concept behind it. This was sent as a review copy to us, and we decided to take it to the party, and it was a blast. I mean, people at the office the next day could not stop talking about the game.
Really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had... some of the famous ones? Like,
Can't even really... It's not even that funny explaining it to you guys listening.
Right.
All I can say is I suggest you get it because it'll just make everyone laugh.
Well, there's one instance where I was watching you guys and you had crowd surfing.
Uh-huh.
And Sydney, basically you guys were standing around for about 10 or 15 seconds not really knowing what to do. And finally Sydney whispered something to you, and she just jumped up in the air.
No, she said, who's going to do it?
And then she just jumped.
And she just jumped.
Yeah.
And luckily we caught her.
Yeah, it was amazing. it was great. But then there was another one where you guys had limousine.
Yeah.
And Randall could not get off party bus. That's all she could ever say is party bus. Because you were like waving your arms over your head.
Well,
like,
I was
oh,
like...
Woo. Well, you are making noise.
I was like standing out the sunroof, you know, like partying.
Well, for the most part, the clues that were given were fairly good. I mean, there were a couple that we really felt like it was fairly specialized because there was Harley Davidson. And the only thing the guy on our team could guess was motorcycle. He never could get past that. And there didn't seem a way for us to really build on Harley Davidson. Noah's Ark was another one, but I don't think it was... I think it was simply because...
I think you guys could have done that a little better.
We could have, and it was also one of the end clues that we had, so...
But then there's ones that were really easy, like sit-up.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, all you had to do was do a sit-up, you know?
And then there's easy ones like lightsaber that Christine... did not get.
Well, she knew what it was. She just couldn't.
Yeah, she's like, light stick. Lightstick, and then finally she's like,
the one in,
that thing
know.
From Star Wars, and Randall, who's a geek like the rest of us, was literally about to lose it. She was having conniption fits. She's
yeah,
like,
well, because her and I were, we were doing our Jedi
you were,
fighting.
Yeah, you were dueling. You guys were dueling. So, reverse rates, it was not on my list, but earlier today, it was one of the things that I mentioned that I thought I might put on my list, but I just didn't. So, I'm glad you put that on there.
Aw.
Okay, so let me grab my list. Well, I'm going to start at the top, and this is a two-part, and I know it's cheating a little bit, but it's a two-part memory, and the first memory is playing Defenders of the Realm with with Richard Launius and Steve Avery at Origins. And let me tell you, that was a fantastic memory for me because I had always wanted to play Defenders of the Realm. I'd been curious about it. Huge fan of Richard's, who we've had on the podcast in the past. I had a snippet of our time talking to Richard and actually listening to Steve, who is, I guess you would say, the mouth of the South, but he's a very enthusiastic guy. Monkey has met him since then. We've had a blast together. He's a fantastic guy to game with. My memory from Origins of playing Defenders of the Realm is fantastic because Richard actually led that game, played with us, Steve was with us, and it was awesome. So here's a small clip of us winning Defenders of the Realm with Richard in his usually subdued self and Steve Avery in his never subdued self.
I have to get two successes on seven dice. I have not done well, but this
he can make you reroll twice, though.
Don't worry about it. You could have rerolled me.
Three.
I could have. he deserves a kill, man.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah. Okay. That's
there's
the goal.
More. Yes. There it is.
Da-da-da-da!
And
that is how you defend the world.
Yeah.
That is how
that's how you do it, boys.
That was awesome. Yeah, that was good.
That one actually wasn't that tight.
I don't want
to. A lot of times, it's really tight.
Okay, the second part of this is, of course, when I brought the game home. And Monkey had no idea what I was bringing home to show her, but I finally convinced her to play. She does not like fantasy, and as we've mentioned, and if you listen to the podcast, we've mentioned Defenders of the Realm several times, but she does not like fantasy, but she does like co-op. So I finally convinced her to play, and after the first bit of taint hit the board, she was hooked. So
it was the taint.
It was all about the taint.
Death by taint.
Which we're going to turn into a t-shirt. We have to turn into a t-shirt. But that's one of my memories that I put on my list because I thought that was great. Not only for indicative of one of the best games that I've played all year, but the experiences that I had both at Origins and then bringing home when it was just me and you playing was fantastic. Which, of course, led up to us talking to Richard.
Yes.
Yes.
And he was on a podcast.
He was on a podcast.
You should listen.
You should. So what else you got? Or you want me to go again?
No, I'll
since
go
you have
again.
A shortened list.
Whatever. A really cool memory for me was after making the very first prototype of Carnival and realizing that it worked.
Yeah, that's on my list. Matter of fact, that's the one right after the one that I just mentioned.
I mean, if you guys have read The Designer Diary or have just been in the loop about Carnival, just really briefly, it all happened within 48 hours, basically. And so once my wheels start turning, they just don't stop until I can get something around it, something complete. So I just busted my butt and used all we had in the house to make, you know, of course we had decks of cards that we could use, and I just looked for any sort of sticky device that I could alter the cards with. And so I found some, I don't even know what they are, dress labels or...
Yeah, I'm not sure.
They're not, no, because they're really thin.
They're really thin. I'm not sure what you found.
I don't know. But I used those and doctored up a regular deck of cards, and I told Chris, I was like, hey, let's try it.
Yeah, and my memory, which I had on my list, was basically when I sat down and said, okay, well, all right, let's play. And then I played, and then I realized,
holy crap,
we actually have a game, and not only a game, but a good game and a marketable game. And that began the development. You know, we started introducing the tickets and the idea of the tickets and honing the actions and the mix of the cards and things like that. And that's what really, I think it was very indicative at least of half of 2011, I mean, because it's been dedicated to nothing but Carnival. Well, not nothing but mostly for Carnival since that time when we realized we had that game that we could really market.
Yeah, and luckily because of my Rain Man skills, I mean, I had almost the exact right mix of cards. I just had one set too many.
Right, in the final game now we have four sets of cards, and in the final you had five. Or not the final, in the original you had five.
Yeah, so just cut one out.
Right, and that actually helped too, because it would have been more in production costs and a bigger box, so... Luckily.
Oh, I knew that.
Oh, yeah, you knew that.
Yeah.
In the back of your mind, you just knew that.
Yeah, so any of you out there who has designed or developed a game know how awesome that feeling is when you put something together, whether it's the first time or after 10 revisions, and you realize, whoa, I can play this.
Yeah, it actually works.
So that is a good memory.
That is definitely on my list. Again, in no particular order, I'm going to go down my list right now. Drunken Igloo Shaking.
Yeah, that's on mine.
Yeah, we mentioned that, what was it, the last podcast?
I don't know. I don't even know the name of the game.
Igloo Pop. I think it may have been in the last game in the State of Games. But we mentioned it before, but Igloo Pop was one of the most... very special. One of the most unique gaming experiences that I've had. And it was with T.C. Petty III, the designer of Viva Java. And he brought it and explained it to us, and we're like, this sounds insane. And then we decided to have a few, and we started shaking igloos.
We intentionally waited till later on in the evening to play. Yeah. I don't think it would have been the same experience.
Well, in the podcast where we mentioned it, you basically said that no one should try to play the game if they're not in an altered state.
Right.
I think you said it. Yeah. So again, if you missed that podcast, basically the gist is you have these little plastic igloos and you have these little round balls inside it that are supposed to represent little baby Eskimos or whatever.
Which why you would shake... an igloo with babies in it.
Who knows? The theme of this game is insane. Absolutely insane. Well, the gameplay is insane to begin with. But anyway, you're trying to match up these cards with the number of little baby Eskimos that are inside these igloos. And so you have to pick them up and without looking at the bottom, shake them next to your ear and then make bets on what number you think are inside those igloos. And the bottom line is that Sherilyn is horrible.
Awful.
At Igloo Pop.
Awful.
But still hilarious. So that's definitely on my memory list for 2011. And I really would like to pick it up. Matter of fact, I should have bought it because Eagle and Griffin, I don't know if they're sold out or not, but for their holiday games list that was for sale, Igloo Pop was on sale for very, very cheap. So if you're listening to this, you can go to eaglegames.net, search for Igloo Pop, and get it for a good price.
Cool. Speaking of TC, I guess a couple of good memories, believe it or not. Cool. He's cool. TC's awesome. He's our buddy. So if you're listening, TC, I didn't mean it. But yeah, actually another really good memory for me for 2011 was due to TC as well. And that was not when he came down the last time, but the time before. And he... brought camels. Of course, I'm talking about Isfahan, which I just fell in love with at first sight. Just everything about it, the components. TC is excellent at teaching games, so I didn't have to read rules or anything, and that was pretty cool. And just the mechanics were awesome, and just something just, you know, a little off-center, just a little bit unique, but still familiar. And we've talked about how that's always a great quality of a game when there's mechanics that are familiar, but they're presented in an innovative way. And for any of you out there who haven't played Isfahan, I highly suggest you do, because it is just an awesome mix of great mechanics, fun theme, and wooden camels.
Yeah, it's a very special gaming experience. It mixes a lot of really fun aspects. It's interesting because it's not a light game, but it's not a super heavy game either.
No.
It's the perfect blend of about an hour's worth of play, maybe a little bit over an hour. You don't have to like think really, really hard to play it, but you do have to be tactical, and you know, it combines area control and You have to make the best choices or tactical choices per turn because it involves dice and dice pools and things like that. It's really, I've really never really played anything like it, even though it does combine a lot of familiar aspects. And camels. That honestly was not on my list, but I think it was probably not on my list because I thought you would probably put it on there.
Mm.
So, yeah, that was great. Him introducing, and the last time that he came, when it was four of us, it was me, you, and TC and John playing, was just as rewarding when we played with three. And it's just a great game.
Yeah, I'd actually like to do some research to see about a two-player variant, which is not official. It's not in the box, but mm-hmm. I heard there's one out there. So actually, if any know of a two-player variant for Isbahan, please tell me.
Yes, because right now, that's the only drawback to the game is the fact that it is a three to four, or three to five. I think it's three to four.
Yeah, I think
it's all a 3-to-4-player game, which, you know, it's a fantastic game, but it's probably the only drawback to the game is that you can't really play it with the two players officially.
Yeah, and I would play it more, and I guess now I have the time to go do the research. But if any of you out there do have a recommendation of a two-player variant,
yes,
I'd love to know about it.
So, something from my list, and I'm going to skip around just a little bit so that we can have some of the things that we've done together, but... what I want to mention is getting Awful Green Things from Outer Space for my birthday.
Yeah, I thought about that. Yes. I didn't put it on my list because it was more that it was an awesome experience for you.
Totally awesome because I waited over 20 years for that game, and I know I've talked a little bit on the podcast before and definitely on Dice Hate Me, but the Awful Green Things from Outer Space was published way back when, back in the late 70s. I didn't come across it until... I don't know if it was the TSR version or the Steve Jackson Games version. I think it may be Steve Jackson. But came across it, have been fascinated with that game forever, have seen it several times, have always wanted to pick it up. And finally, Steve Jackson released the ultimate version of it. And Monkey got it for my birthday for me. And then proceeded to kick my butt in the game, of course, as usual. But it was a blast. And I'm sad because we really haven't had a chance to play it much after that, because I definitely want to play it again. Great game. I love it. I know why it's lasted as long as it has, because the design and just the whimsical nature of it and the quirky humor in it is fantastic. So definitely one of my gaming memories. I mean, I've got a picture of me holding the game box on BGG and on our holiday card that we'll be sending out. I mean, I've waited that long to get the game, and I'm really glad that I have it. So do you like it?
I do like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, this is a good tie-in, you know, a segue. For me, another really cool memory has to do with childhood as well. Like, you've been waiting for this game forever, and it just triggered the thought that about playing, one day I will learn how to make sentences. playing Mystery Express for the first time with your mom. And for me, I love the game because I love deduction games. But it also just reminded me of the game Whodunit, which was one of my favorite games as a kid. So it was like, you know, and more challenging. Actually, I don't know if it's more challenging than Whodunit or not, because I haven't played Whodunit since I was a kid.
Right.
So,
and I can't speak to that because I've never played it.
That's pretty crazy. I've played a game that you haven't played.
It's true. I've heard of the game, but I've never played it.
They don't even make it anymore.
No.
But yeah, playing Mystery Express was, it was like a throwback, you know? Like putting on my throwback uniform.
A lot of people describe Mystery Express as Clue on steroids, and
it doesn't even come close to Clue, though. It's like Clue because you set aside, you know.
Well, because you're
the unknowns.
Right. You're trying to ascertain why somebody killed somebody with what and what time and all that. But you're right. I mean, the fact that it's simply a deduction game about murder.
Yeah.
That's why people compare it to Clue. But It has a lot of differences to it. It's a really fantastic game, and I'm glad that we got a chance to play it with Mom, because she likes those types of deduction elements. And
again, another unfortunate thing for me is that you can't play it with two players.
It's true, yeah. That's why we waited so long to play it, because we never really had time to set aside when we had 3 to 5 players to play it. And every now and then we'll have that number, you know, over to play something, but Mystery Express just never came up.
Mm-mm.
in that regards. So that was that. I mean, that was definitely a good memory too, because my mom had a great time.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a very, very close game the first time that we played. But the second game, you kind of laid waste to us because you have that Rain Man ability to remember the clock cards so you can tell what time the murder took place. And my mom and I are sitting there with three clues, and you've got five, and we're like, oh, great. I'll bring up another instance that involves both of us that I have on my list. Our Valentine's Weekend Game-a-thon, which I loved, and that was actually the subject of one of our very first podcasts.
I was dressed like a princess.
Oh, totally, yes.
I don't know if we can post that picture up. It's pretty funny, though.
Yeah, it was nice. She was not really dressed
so
like a princess.
Not nice. So not nice. But it was intentional, right? I said I didn't have to get dressed.
Exactly.
And it was a little chilly, so I might have had a few layers on.
About 18,
of clothes probably, that didn't match.
It was very sexy.
Yeah.
But the specifically from that weekend, and we played a lot of games that weekend.
Yeah,
actually,
what are you about to bring up? Because we just played so much.
We played a lot of games, and we played a lot of games that we had not played before, and actually several games that I had not played before, or at least had not played for a long time.
This was our Valentine's date, by the way. We decided not to go out to dinner or anything. We got a bunch of good food. We got, like, was it prosciutto and red wine? Mm-hmm. And we just got a bunch of our, like, olives, like a bunch of our favorite. We just snacked all day. We didn't even have a meal.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a lot. Didn't we have meatballs, too?
Maybe.
I think we might have had meatballs.
But it was all, like, snacky foods.
Yeah, just snacky foods. We played, like, let's say, for instance, Cthulhu Rising, which that's kind of pseudo Sudoku.
We played Kickbones.
Kickbones, yeah, which actually was
that
a really
was
good
fun,
game. Yeah. Kickbones is a good game.
What else did we play?
Well, I'm about to mention the infamous game that we played that is now on the retired games shelf is Digging.
Oh, was that that day?
That was that day, We played Digging twice, and we have never played it again because it is horrible.
Maybe we should try again. Maybe it's good with more than two players.
Well, that's what I've heard, but I'm scared to even
break
it out.
It can't be worse.
Well, that's for sure.
It can't be worse.
It could probably only be worse if it was solitaire.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a gaming memory for me because it was just a fun day where we got to play a lot of different things. We played Migato from Ben Gerber, and we played several
things. We played a lot of things. A lot of things that we hadn't ever played.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Did we play any major game?
Honestly, I don't remember.
I don't know.
I don't know that we did. I think we played just a lot of little things that we just wanted to try out.
That we hadn't gotten to.
Exactly. But anyway, that was a lot of fun. So, but the infamous Digging incident is what I'll bring it for.
Wow. I feel like that was longer ago than 10 months.
Well, I mean, a lot has happened in those 10 months. So, and I know your game list is a little shorter than mine, but here's one of the memories that I liked was our first Game-a-thon Apocalypse Festicon at Tom's because it was the first time we really hung out with Tom Gerganis. We met up with Chris Norwood, and it was the first time that Sherilyn had ever really been kind of in a big group of players like that. We had had some people over here to the apartment before to play Arkham Horror and things like that. But it was the first kind of game day, which was...
Oh, yeah, where I didn't really know anybody.
Right.
Yeah.
It was sort of the predecessor to the conventions that she would start to go to later in the year. But that was a good gaming memory for me because I think it was the first game we played was Homesteaders.
Mm-hmm. That was cool.
Really good game. As a matter of fact, we've not played it since then, which we've now gotten the second edition, which I really want to play when we go to the mountains with Sean and Jackie. I mean, it was a great game, and you ended up winning. I mean, you were just establishing your dominance right from the beginning.
Well, Tom said he won, but then later he said, I think Monkey really won.
Yeah.
He was the winner, but then I think he was like...
He seeded it. Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. There was a couple little hiccups there in the middle where it was a little odd about what happened. But yeah, I mean, we'll be able to tell later. I mean, you're going to be good at it because I just know you are. I bid way too much. I mean, when I want something, that's the thing. I love bidding mechanics in games, but when I want something, I will pay a lot of money for it. And it's kind of my downfall.
That was actually the first day that I ever ran a game. I ran a game of Pandemic.
Yeah, you did. That's right.
Yep.
You played Pandemic, and you played a lot of... You actually played a lot of Settlers of Catan that day.
No, I didn't. We all played that together.
Settlers? No, I was playing Alien Frontiers while you were playing Settlers.
Oh, you were?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't run Settlers. Well, maybe I did.
You didn't run it, but
I didn't play a lot of Settlers. We played one game.
Oh, maybe one. Okay.
I don't like Settlers, so I don't... I mean, it's okay.
Well, anyway, you were playing Settlers while I was playing Alien Frontiers, and then afterwards we...
Oh, I played my first RPG.
Oh, that's right, Dread.
Yeah.
We played a game of Dread, and it was...
That was fun.
That was a lot of fun.
That was Lucy.
For those of you who have not heard of Dread, it's a horror-based system, and it's very flexible. It's kind of a little wide open for interpretation, but basically you play it with a Jenga tower. And whenever you want to, and it's at the discretion of the GM, but whenever you want to perform an action or even say that something's going to happen in the story, you're able to influence it, and the GM can say, okay, well, that can happen if you manage one pull, or two pulls, or sometimes three pulls, depending on the difficulty of what you're trying to do. What that simply means is you've got to pull a block from the Jenga tower, depending on how many they establish. And so the tension ratchets up if you manage to pull a wood chip or wood block or whatever out of the Jenga tower and it falls, then that pretty much indicates that something really horrible is going to happen to your character, probably death, and the GM has to determine what that is for the benefit of the story. But it was a lot of fun. It was...
I was a little shy about it at first because I didn't really know... I had no idea what to do. But I got into it.
Oh, you definitely got into it. You were the Kung Fu Asian chick.
Oh, I wasn't Asian.
Yeah, you were. Just because
I'm Asian doesn't mean I'm Asian in every RPG. That's messed up.
It was just funny that your character knew Kung Fu. Was taking Kung Fu.
Yeah, well.
You're also the brainy chick, so
yeah, I was the brain.
Well. Yeah. Anyway, it was basically like it was the Breakfast Club meets the faculty, but it was a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, I had a crush on the faculty that was running the detention, and that was the GM.
Oh, yeah. It was a great story. Tom was the GM for that story, and that was one of the most fun RPG experiences that I've had in a while, but that was a lot of fun. We also played Seven Wonders that night,
mm-hmm.
which was actually the only time we've really played
it. It's the only time I've ever played it.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll get to play that some more. So that was a memory that I have on my list. Do you have anything else?
And this is recent also, but... for any of you who listened to our podcast last weekend, playing Can't Stop at my mom's was just awesome. I've never seen my mom so much into a game. And for any of you who listen to the podcast, you'll hear exactly why.
Yeah, if you've not heard the last podcast, go and check out episode 20, the one about family ties. And that will definitely have some clips of Jennifer yelling about her not being able to stop.
Yep.
Which was hilarious. That was a really good time. In previous years, we've actually had some pretty good memories with your mom playing, like, Catchphrase.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a lot of different ones.
Ticket to Ride.
Ticket to Ride, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but Ticket to Ride was more serious. We played the card... Well, we played both versions, but the card game, because we got that for Christmas.
For Christmas.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, this one was just the most funny and enthusiastic.
Very, very animated, for
yeah.
sure. let's see. Oh, here's one that does not include Sherilyn. The one that does not include Sherilyn is the freezer incident, which she has heard about on many occasions.
As have all of you.
Most of you. And if you have not, I'm speaking of our time of playing Mansions of Madness at Mace West, which was in a previous podcast titled The One About Mansions of Madness, which was appropriately titled. But for those of you who have not heard this story, here is a little clip from that episode with me, Sherilyn, and Michael Harrison recounting what exactly happened in the freezer. So we're standing all around, and Michael's setting the scene. We're getting ready to play. We have this entire huge mansion going out for us, and we start playing. And we played intelligently. We're hearing clues that lead us off into one room, but since the place is so big, and we know that the entire thing is timed, we should probably split up into two teams that are balanced. And that's what we did. So I went off with Michael McGlynn in the other room. So I had spell capabilities and he had a Tommy gun. So we're following the actual clues, while Joe Diamond and Jenny Barnes are going off and just basically doing a cursory search of the rooms around the foyer. Standard operating procedure in any exploration game. Would you not agree?
Yeah. I mean, I was preparing monsters for you guys, and we were playing like normal and setting in for the long haul. You were doing everything you were supposed to.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, three turns in, this will be the fourth investigator turn. In this game, there is a mechanic where after every keeper turn, a timepiece is put onto a particular card, and when those timepieces match the number on the card, it's flipped over. There's a certain clue or some event happens. Well, this is before that card actually comes up. It would have been the first one in the game. This is the fourth turn. Scott Seeley, who was playing Joe Diamond, he and Jenny Barnes were investigating the laboratory. So they're in the laboratory, and this witch has been popping up for two turns, and finally realize we know the witch is going to disappear, so we come up with this plan where we'll just ignore the witch. So Scott, as Joe, decides he's just going to go and investigate the freezer.
The next available room.
The next available room, exactly. Basically the only room that had anything you could actually search anywhere in the entire area. There's something in the room. We've got to find out where it is. So forever from now on, we will have the freezer incident etched into our minds because Scott steps through the door and there's a lock card on it. And locks usually indicate you have to like solve a puzzle or find a key or something like that. Well, it allowed you to go into the room. And what the lock card basically said was it was this long exposition about it's freezing. And then you feel this rush of air coming towards you. And all of a sudden, Ithaqua slams into your body and crushes every bone in it. You are killed. And that's when Michael got this look on his face like, oh no. Then he calls me to the side and shows me what the actual objective of the game is.
Well, the objective, the winning condition for the keeper, for Green-Eyed Boy, is for one of the investigators to enter the freezer.
Right. Which we did.
And so I won. But I was really confused and I was very... I was really sad.
Which, and I understood why you called me. I was like, why is he calling me to the side? Because I'm not sure why. And then all of a sudden I read it and it dawned on me like, that makes no sense whatsoever. So we had to halt the game and we literally took apart the entire game, looked at all the clues, trying to figure out what we had done wrong. And I know, Michael, you were worried for the longest time that it was your fault, that you had set it up wrong, that something was missing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I mentioned earlier that if you have one pile of cards out of place, it can kind of screw up the path of the investigators through the mansion. And I had a slight snafu earlier, we had, four rounds.
Right.
It was in, like, round
10
two.
10 minutes earlier, yeah.
Right. And I was concerned that it might have been something left over from that, but it wasn't. We ripped through the game, we ripped through all the clue cards trying to figure out, was there something that would warn the investigators about not going into this freezer? And turns out it was the event card that Chris was talking about, the timed cards that come up every four rounds. We just hadn't gotten to it yet.
Right, and I actually had to go online to find that. And so I went back over and flipped it back over, and sure enough, right there on the timed event card, it says, don't go in the freezer. I mean, it says just right out. I mean, here, first of all, why would you make it possible for investigators to go directly within feasibly? We could have done it within turn three, but we did in turn four because of the witch. You actually helped us.
But not enough.
But not enough, right. We figure out what finally happened, and we're just pissed, all of us. I know you were upset because you had spent... like 3 days beforehand, you read through it all, you made sure all the cards were the way you wanted it, you read the entire scenario. I mean, probably the total prep time for this game was probably about at least 3 hours, right?
Yeah, 2.5. And it was no comfort to me that I actually won, because what sort of win is that?
It's not a win. I mean, the thing is that, like, when we played the Inner Sanctum, I lost, but I only lost by, like, a slim margin. It was the last turn. And I didn't care that I lost because it turned out that it was actually really exciting at the end.
I know, and you got 2 hours or so of play out of your game, and we played for like 30 minutes, maybe 20 minutes.
That was just upsetting to everyone. And of course, we, even though we were at a convention when we played this, we had a limited time window because one of the guys who hadn't played the game, Scott, who it, ironically enough, was the one that opened the freezer, and so he was the one that doomed mankind. He had to get back to running demos, and so we didn't have time to really do anything else. But we were so disheartened after it that we didn't even want to play it again. So other than that, at Mace West was a very memorable time just because it was kind of like a guy thing. And Monkey didn't go to Mace West, but she still had a good time. She was here at home.
I haven't been to any Maces. You've been to three.
Mm-hmm. Since we've been together, yeah.
Yeah,
three.
And you never take me. Actually, I don't know why. I have no desire to go to those.
I don't know why either. It's fun.
Well, because it's usually all you boys.
No, it's a boy thing.
Yeah, it's just, it's like your guy thing, so I don't even think about going.
Well, you can go.
No, it's okay. I'm fine.
Well,
I get the house all to myself.
In addition to the Mansions of Madness incident at Mace West, we also have the bear rape incident, which I will not get into. But there's a recount on DiceHateMe.com about Mace West. You can go there and check out one of the tags for conventions, and that will come up. But that was a particularly interesting experience from Mace West. Let me see. Oh, one of the thing that I'm going to recount now that does not include Monkey. However, peripherally it does, but one of the most pivotal parts of this year, other than Carnival, was my first play of Viva Java at Origins. And that was when I met TC Petty. Actually, I'd met TC briefly before this game and had talked to him, and we'd all kind of hung out together. It was John knew him from doing one of the Unpub festivals that TC had come to, and also the Rio Grande contest that John and TC had entered the games in. But anyway, got together with TC, and he agreed to break out Viva Java and play it for us. And from the first time that I played it, I was in love with it. It was so unique and yet so familiar and comfortable that I just knew. It just stuck in my head all week. It stuck in my head when I came home. I talked to Monkey about it several times, debated over and over and over, do we need to sign this guy? Do we need to get this game? Do we need to publish this game? And ultimately, I decided that we needed to. And I'm glad, because, I mean, TC's not just somebody that I've met, but he's become a friend since then. And
he's come to visit us a couple of times.
Yeah, exactly. And we've met him again. We went to play at the World Board Gaming Championships in August. That's when I met him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time you played Viva Java.
Yeah, and actually, that's actually one of my memories, too, was the WBC, because that was my first real, like, gaming convention.
Exactly. So that was your introduction to the convention world.
Yes.
Well, that was a good convention, too, because, yeah, it did introduce you to Viva Java. You got a chance to play test Carnival with a lot of different people.
We met some really cool people, too. We met Richard Bliss for, like, five seconds.
Yeah.
He saw us from across the room. It was, like, so romantic.
Well, actually,
no, it wasn't.
He did the Batman thing where, like, I had posted a picture of us sitting next to a cooler playing Carnival, and all of a sudden he goes, I don't know where that cooler was at.
Yeah.
So he came and found us and hunted us down. So that was cool. I mean, all of this led up to basically the last half of 2011. From that moment that I met TC playing Viva Java has pretty much been from the Carnival moment all the way through today. Us being at the WBC, and in the future of us going to John Mueller's Unpub, which we'll talk about in just a little bit, but also publishing Viva Java, which will be on Kickstarter in January. So that was a huge memory for me, and I'm glad that I had that chance to meet everyone that I had, because it's really shaped the scope of what we're doing with Dice Hate Me Games now, and just, you know, the people that we know and we have become friends with in that time. And so it's been really fantastic. So that's one of my fond memories of 2011. What else you got?
Well, anything? We touched on it, the WBC.
The WBC, right.
Yeah. That was, I wasn't sure actually if I'd make it through entire days of gaming, but it's like when you're at the casino in Vegas, you have no concept of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're in one room for,
which has no windows.
Yeah, for like 12 hours. They probably pump oxygen in there as well.
Well, they should.
But yeah, I just got to meet a whole bunch of people. Well, of course, TC and John Mueller, who I had heard about because of your meeting them at Origins. So that was cool. And then we met Jason.
Mm-hmm. From Nolly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I got to meet Stephen Bonacore,
right,
from Stronghold. Again, whom you had mentioned because of Origin, so that was really cool. We also met Ben Rossett and Mike
Swearin.
Uh-huh. and played some of their prototypes, which was awesome. And actually, I hope we run into them again at the Unpub.
Yeah, I hope that they're there. Ben sent us prototypes of the Market and 3 Squared, which were both really, really good.
Really good.
It was a lot of fun. Actually, we talked about it on the podcast, the one about the WBC. But also, we played States After the Fall for Mike Swearin.
Loved it.
Yeah, fantastic game. Very huge in scope. Publishing it's going to be a challenge, but would be a fantastic game to see in print. A lot of fun. Very simplified mechanics behind it, but a lot of chances for combos and variations like in Magic the Gathering and things like that.
And we went with our friends Sean and Jackie, and that was really good. It was also Jackie's first experience at a convention, but it was good too to kind of strengthen that friendship and develop that relationship. So we stayed with them at the crappy Red Roof Inn.
Oh my goodness.
So
anybody who's going to go to the WBC, do not stay at the Red Roof Inn right down the street from the host.
Unless you like musky, damp, dark areas.
Oh, horrible. Yeah. Not good. I mean, granted, you don't really, honestly, by the time you're done gaming and you're tired, you don't much care about where you sleep, but this was pretty bad. Matter of fact, it's been strange. I mean, the Marriott that Sean and I stayed at in Columbus for Origins was pretty bad, too. It was very weird. I mean, they were nice there, but they had just cleaned the carpets for 3 of the days that we stayed there, it was like sleeping underwater. It was just damp. It was
disgusting.
Oh, it was horrible. Yeah, it was horrible. Anyway, so don't stay at the Red Roof Inn. But anyway, the WBC was a great gaming experience for us, made a lot of friends. We're looking forward to going back next year. Matter of fact, we're going to make an announcement soon about a special website that we're working on. We're not ready to yet because it's not quite ready, but it'll include a calendar of when you may catch Monkey and myself at a convention or where we may be, like the Unpub 2. And that'll be pretty cool because we'll be able to map out times when we can go different places. There may be ones where it's just me or possibly even just Sherilyn at them, but for the most part, it'll be both of us there representing ourselves and Dice Hate Me Games.
Where am I going?
I don't know yet.
Oh, so you're going to send me to Essen?
Yeah, you might be at Essen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, you just go on ahead.
Okay.
That's cool.
Okay,
right?
Cool.
Yeah. Over my dead body.
I got friends.
You do got friends.
They'll take care of me.
So, let's see. We've almost run down my list, but let's just really quickly, I'm going to touch on this one. Introducing my mom and my stepdad to Trollhalla and Wits and Wagers. On mm-hmm. that weekend. It was a lot of fun because that was really one of the most memorable gaming weekends we had up there in the mountains. Trollhalla was a good gaming experience. I mean, they just took to it really well. We had a good time playing it. We all named all the tiles and just got into the spirit of the game. The whole theme of the game just resonated with them, and they also got the mechanics fairly easily. But also it was an interesting gaming experience because it was when I fell off my chair and basically almost gave my I'm convinced I gave myself a concussion, but
he did not simply fall off his chair. Chris here thought it would be he snaps photos. Well, he loves first of all, he loves photography, so that easily translates to him always having a camera around the gaming table and taking pictures and stuff. So he had a blonde moment and decided, you know what would be perfect? If I stood on this folding chair at the back where it folds so that I can fall, and I'll do it right next to
the cast iron stove. Yeah.
And then what'll be awesome is that when I fall, I can hit my head on it and gash my head. That's what happened.
It was pretty bad.
It was honestly entertaining once I realized he was okay.
Well, I wasn't okay for quite a while, so you were laughing when I was not okay.
Your mom was laughing.
I was shaking. Like, I had the shakes.
Your mom was laughing, so I thought it was okay that I laughed, too.
Anyway,
I was taking the lead from the mother.
I got a lump on my head about the size of a softball. It was horrible. But maybe that tainted my game experience or whatever. I don't know, but it was a good, memorable experience just that entire weekend. We played Trahala with some wagers, which was fantastic.
Was that when we introduced Pitch Car?
No, because that was after I came back from Origins. That was in the spring.
Oh.
Yeah.
We played Carnival.
No.
No. I'm lying.
Yeah, she's lying. No, the Trahala and Wits and Wagers experience was in the spring. It was around Easter. And then Origins, after Origins is when we introduced Pitch Car and Carnival, because both of those came after that. So, do you have any others before I get to the list? Okay. One short little memory that I have was...
short memory?
It's a very short memory, but only because I was reminded because we were digging out photos for our Christmas card this year. It was when we had brought back the table from IKEA. We first got our gaming table, and we were just, like, enamored, and we took advantage of it every chance we could. At one point, we had Stone Age on one side and Fresco on the other. So we were, like, going back and forth between games, playing Fresco one night and Stone Age the other, and it was like that for a good 2 weeks. So that was a good memory because, I mean, we really haven't done that since then, but it was kind of fun because we had them on split ends of the table since we have a huge table now. So that was a lot of fun. And the final thing on my list, which she's not going to understand. Well, she'll understand, but she's not going to guess that I put it on there.
I saw it.
Did you? What is it?
Your first play of Elder Sign?
Yes. Our first game of Elder Sign. And why other than the fact that it's a fantastic game, is that memorable?
Give me a hint. Give me a clue. Give me a footprint.
Give you a footprint, a clue? How much do you like co-ops?
I like co-ops.
How much do you like co-ops?
I like co-ops a lot.
Would you consider them probably your favorite type of games?
No.
I would. Because, well, I'll just give it away to you. co-ops kind of make you a little randy.
What? I thought this was a family episode.
It is a family. What? That's nothing wrong saying that. You get a little excited about co-ops.
What?
Yeah. I'm just going to leave it at that.
You have issues.
I'm just saying. It was fun. We had a good time playing Elder Sign.
Do you know how many tweets I'm going to get about, hey, you want to play a co-op game?
Well, hopefully they won't be tweeting you since you're a married woman. But anyway, yeah, she likes Elder Sign. She likes co-ops. It's when we're all a team together. It's a bonding moment.
I do like that, but I wouldn't say they're my favorite genre of game.
Well, they're one of my favorites simply because of that reason. But
you never play Pandemic with me anymore.
Oh, that's because because we have to play all night long. There's no time to have, any alone time if we play Pandemic because we're only playing that all night.
You have issues.
You have issues. Are you embarrassed?
Yes. What the heck?
So anyway, those are my gaming memories of 2011. Do you have anything to add to that?
No.
No, you're done talking now?
Done.
You're done.
I'm over it.
Aw.
I'm over it.
Okay, so obviously we're not really going to go into the state of games because we've talked about all the games and memories that we had from 2011, and also because in the past couple weeks we really haven't had time to play. Oh, wait, Monkey has a thought.
I have another one.
You have another game in memory?
Yes.
This is a bonus memory outside of the one we just talked about.
Bonus memory, and it is a special bonus. We gamed over Skype.
Oh, yeah, we did.
With Ian Noble and his Lisa. Now wife.
Now Lisa Noble. That's right.
Lisa. Which you've said like 20 times.
Lisa.
Yeah.
That was fun. Yeah.
Yeah, we played the first game we played with them because I was just learning how to play Dominion, which ultimately is, as you all know, not my favorite. But it was really fun. We played it over Skype. We played several games. And that was our first session. And then we played again, I don't know, however many months later, we played Alien Frontiers.
Yeah.
With them on Skype, and that was really cool.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It was a good gaming memory. And I wish we'd had time to play again since then. It's just, we've been busy, and of course they've been busy, and they got married, and It's we hope that we'll be able to do it again, hopefully after the new year, and make some, block some time out to do Skype gaming. If none of you have tried gaming over Skype, some games are not exactly built for that, but we have found that it's pretty fun as long as you got the setup, just right, and you can tell what everyone's rolling or slash playing with the cards, things like that. It works out really well.
Yeah, especially for, especially with, I would say, Twitter mostly. I mean, we've just kind of, you become acquainted with people who live thousands of miles away, and you find like, oh, yeah, it'll be so cool to game with you, but, when's the next time you're going to be in
California?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a lot of people that we know in California, which is crazy that most of the people we talk to really are Californians, but we would definitely like to do more Skype gaming, mobile gaming. I mean, as much as we like to get together in person with people here as well, we have so many people online that we would definitely
Yeah, which
try.
Is kind of a good way to just, because we haven't really spoken to many of these people, just
right.
written.
Okay, so do you have any more?
No.
All right, as I was saying, we don't really have any thing to mention for the state of games because we really haven't had much time to play games other than what we mentioned before with Reverse Charades, which was hilarious. We had a great time playing that. So basically, we want to talk just for a moment about how much we appreciate the support that people have given us about Carnival. A lot of you have already gotten the update. We had hoped to have Carnival to people by Christmas, and because of some of the complications we've run into with our printer, with shipping, things like that, things that are really out of our control, and most of you already know the story behind that, we just aren't able to deliver the game at the time we wanted to. But we updated all of you, we let you know the story behind that, and it has been nothing but an outpouring of support. And that has been fantastic.
Which I know has lowered Chris's blood pressure.
But yeah, before that, it was not very low at all. I felt like the top of my head was going to fly off because having to broker a deal with getting these things shipped and getting them shipped on time. But you guys have been fantastic, and we really appreciate your support. You've supported us since day one. Most of you have been there even before day one. But all of you have been fantastic through the Kickstarter campaign afterward. Every single comment has been like, relax, it's fine, we're cool, we'll wait for it. And that's meant a lot to us because we're going to go into, Christmas and the holidays and just be able to enjoy our time and do what we can to get the games out to you when we can, as soon as we can. We received an update from the shipping company. Possibly we'll be able to get these games out before Christmas Eve, and some of you may have it before New Year's Eve. And that would be awesome. But thank you very much from both of us for letting us know that you're still behind us and we're not letting you down. I know some of you may be disappointed, but you've let us know that it's not the end of the world, that this is you guys feel like family, and we wish we could give all of you a Christmas present or a big hug at least.
We love you guys.
We love you guys. You're awesome. You've been awesome from day one. So thank you all for that. I hope you guys have a happy holiday. Happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Seasons greetings.
However you choose to spend this time with your family and friends, we hope you guys are having a good time and know that we appreciate and love each and every one of you for the support you've given us. Basically, we're looking forward to 2012. We've looked back at 2011. And in 2012, we mentioned a little bit about the Unpub 2. A little bit more about that is this will be the second one. But John,
That's the two,
yes. The first one, John Moeller from Car Trunk Entertainment put together, is basically a time for designers and developers of games that have not been published to come together and to display their games and get feedback from the general gaming public. So whether you have a game to present or where they want to come and check out games that are in the prototype stages and offer feedback or just check out cool things that'll be coming up pretty soon. That's what this stands for. And for more information on the Unpub 2, you can go to cartrunk.net and search. Again, he'll have banners there, but we're going to be there. We're going to be there at TC, Petty the Third, as far as I know, is planning on being there as well. So we'll have Viva Java there. Some of the games will actually be eligible for a prize, which people will vote for at the end of the day. Viva Java will not be eligible for that prize because it's in the process of being published. However, it is not yet published, so it will be open to the public to check out in prototype form. You want to come check that out? We'll be there. We'll be demoing the game with TC. We'll, of course, hopefully by that time, have our copies of Carnival, so we'll be there with at least one copy of Carnival, but possibly more. And hopefully, maybe by that time, we may even have a playable version of Take the Bait.
That would be cool.
That would be cool. That's up to Monkey. It's totally up to her.
Excuse me?
Yeah, it's all on your shoulders.
I thought we were
co-designing
this one.
Oh, yeah. I guess I can't. I guess I can't get off easy.
If you want your name on a box, you got to help with the proto.
Well, anyway, our hope is to have at least something that people could take a peek at for Take the Bait. And we'll be testing that out in the weeks previous to the Unpub at the Mountains with Sean and Jackie. So you guys want to come and just meet us, talk to us. We'd love to see you. Plan on January 14th, Dover, Delaware. More information is on cartrunk.net, but check that out. And we hope we'll see you all there. So until then, we have just one last thing to mention. You guys know that Viva Java is coming up. It's coming up fast. And right after the new year, it'll probably be up on Kickstarter anywhere between January 10th and the Unpub. But we're going to look at those specific dates. We have the production in full swing. The video is almost done. I'm working on art production as fast as I possibly can. Quotes are coming in. We have more playtesting going on our end and TC's end. There's a lot of tightening going on with the game to make things much easier and more streamlined to play. All that's going fantastically well. We're hoping to unveil the first iteration of the rules right after the new year. Also, a lot of the prototype art, not prototype art, but production art for all of you. So stay tuned. We'll announce it on the podcast, but also at DiceHateMe.com. And if you'd like to sign up for our newsletter for Dice Hate Me Games, you can go to DiceHateMe.com/games. Sign up for the newsletter there and keep up to date for when all of our releases have news. Right?
Right.
So, until then, if you want to know more about us, our upcoming projects, or if you'd just like to chat about board games, you can always find us on Twitter. I'm Dice Hate Me.
And I'm Monkey238. If you're interested in Skyping with us, let us know.
Yeah, exactly. And be sure to check out DiceHateMe.com for all the latest and greatest in reviews and news. So, until next time, this is Dice Hate Me.
And this is Monkey238.
Saying thanks for listening. And may all your rolls be sixes. And Happy New Year!